If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret, searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
The Sound Podcast is part of the OSIRIS Network. OSIRIS is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. We'll be doing many live events this summer around the country, which will include artist interviews, contests, and more. Sign up for our newsletter at OSIRISpod.com to stay in the loop. Relics Magazine is a media partner of OSIRIS. For more, visit relics.com. The show starts now.
Can you read me? Come on, give us a sign.
You've been listening to Distress Signal from Papadocio off their full-length record Content Coma, due out September 7th. I have long been fascinated by the emergence of the live EDM prog rock thing and its place within the jam band scene. That conversation has to involve Papadocio, a five-piece originally from Athens, Ohio, who now call the hotbed of southern music Asheville, North Carolina, home. We recently sat down with brothers Billy and Sam Brous, along with Anthony Thug Martin, to get the lowdown on their genreless sonic tour de force. Our conversation started when I asked Billy about the band's influences and the inspiration for their sound.
It is interesting. People ask us what genre we are more often than I feel comfortable explaining to them that we aren't necessarily
right.
Put into one category. At least that's what I think. Maybe I'm giving myself too much, or us too much credit, but it's cool, man. That also means we get to do whatever the hell we want, so
right.
It's kind of fun. I mean, we don't really stray too far away from, you know, somewhat approachable rock and roll and electronica fused together, you know, because you know, in that vein, I guess there is a bit of a genre that, and a sound at least, that we've curated. So, I mean, no matter what we do, it'll be our sound, you know? So, but, it's cool, man. It's definitely very freeing because we can do, 140 BPM dance rager and then go play straight rock and roll right after that, you know, and that's keeps us interested, keeps, I would hope to think the crowd interested. And so, you know, you never really know what you're going to get. And, I like it.
I guess, Sam, I'm curious about the influences because they do range like from probably EDM music to progressive rock to straight ahead rock. So I'm curious about the influences that you and Billy grew up with and then mixing both Anthony and Mike into the band. And maybe, Anthony, you can speak to this after. I'm curious about the shared influences of the band to get you guys in a studio to create the kind of music that you do.
Yeah. Definitely all over the place. And everybody's a little bit different, but, you know, Billy and I really grew up around a lot of Steely Dan with my dad playing Steely Dan and stuff. And, yes, I remember one time, my dad got like a $900 gift card to Best Buy and like used it pretty much to buy us music exclusively, which was really sweet. And the first day that we went, I remember getting Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots. Billy got that one and he got OK Computer by Radiohead. I got, Close to the Edge by Yes. And that was all in one day. And that sort of like, those three albums were really the start of like some pretty big obsessions. But, as a group, I think we really came together. I mean, from my perspective, around a lot of what Radiohead has done in the past and just like that sort of career of like, you know, always progressing their sound and never quite doing what you expect them to do because, you know, they're not really compromising their, you know, their art for anybody. And,
and like you guys, they have a distinct sound. I mean, you know, when you turn on a Radiohead track or Radiohead album, you know that it's Radiohead and not Oasis or some other UK band, right? I mean, you know, right away.
Right. I mean, that's the goal. I mean, if we could get to the point where people know that, that would be really cool. It's just, you know, speaking to the other question that you asked Billy too, I think the genres stuff, you know, people expect things to be labeled and neat and categorized, and especially when they're trying to consume, you know, content. So I think it might alienate some people because the music isn't always right away accessible. But that's okay. But, yeah, I don't know, Anthony, do you want to talk about some other influences?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the same time I was listening to a lot of that stuff. I listened to, I mean, pretty much what the progressive music of my time was before I even got into some of the older stuff. And what I mean by that is, like, I was listening to Tool, Rush, Nine Inch Nails, things like that when I was kind of younger and more angsty. At the same time, I was listening to Square Pusher, Aphex Twin, what isn't necessarily called the EDM thing. It was more called the IDM thing. And that has been trying to synthesize progressive music with the IDM sound has been one of the mainstays of what we do. But I mean, at the core of what I feel like we are, if we had a genre, it would be progressive. And one of the things that one of our greatest accomplishments was to make it into this quarterly magazine called Progression Magazine, not because it means anything to anybody other than, like, you know, old hairy, like, dudes that listen to, you know, like, music in the 70s. But I mean, to us, that's an accomplishment. And I think that a lot of the young people don't even know that a lot of the music that they listen to, especially if it's some festival music, is kind of the remnants of what progressive music was all about. And it was, you know, there's 50 million riffs in one song. It moves through a bunch of different, you know, even sometimes in the same song, moves through a bunch of different genres, and it's a journey, you know, and that's kind of what I feel like a lot of the music we're trying to make reflects, hopefully.
It's so interesting to me that Steely Dan comes up in these conversations with bands like you and Aqueous and even Umphrey's McGee, because while they are a progressive band, you know, I guess it's the jazz background that they both have and the jazz background that both of them brought to the table that's so different from, you know, Skinny Puppy or any of the IDM Tool or any of those harder progressive rock bands. So it's so interesting to me that they continue to be one of those bands that people talk about in this genre that are so out of left field in many ways. Is it because of the nuance in the songs and the intricacy of the music that they were making? I mean, is that what it is, and the chord progression and chord changes?
Yeah, I mean, that part is really profound for sure. I mean, I think that a lot of people subconsciously will keep a Steely Dan song on as well because of the production value is so high. I mean, it's like,
yeah,
it sounds perfect.
Incredible.
And another thing that I've realized too is that, like, his perspective, as like weird and creepy as it is so like poignant. Like his, you know, it's his voice, you know,
right,
that he's speaking from. And that's so unique, and you can't write something that sounds like that, whatever that type of storytelling is, and that weird type of nostalgia for, you know, crazy, creepy dude in the 70s. Like you can't do that without being like, oh, that sounds like a Steely Dan song,
right?
And so, you know, it's just iconic. Yeah
And same thing with the Flaming Lips. I mean, all of these bands that you've mentioned, whether it's Flaming Lips or Yes or even our hometown Rush, you know, we're big Rush fans here in Toronto, and they grew up just not too far from where we're talking from right now. They all have, you know, distinctive voices and distinctive sounds that could only be Rush or could only be Flaming Lips or Steely Dan. But let's talk about Papadocio for a sec, and let's get back to it. You're releasing Content Coma on December 7th. You've already released
September 7th.
September. What did I say?
Yes.
Wow.
December.
I'm sorry. I can't
read.
It's
all good.
I can't read, apparently. You've already released two singles, which are great, Pool of Stars and Distress Signal. For this record, though, you did something different in terms of collaborating in the studio. Talk about how that came together and how you decided to do this a little bit differently than the past records.
We use this, we always are putting our song ideas together into somewhat of a, you know, collage. But this time we used this service called Splice. Splice.com is a way that you can share session files from different different software, and you can collaborate on it in a way that doesn't necessarily require you to be in the same room as somebody else. You can spit out your musical idea, send it to other people. They can split it up and hit solo on their specific track and kind of rewrite it, record it, and then upload it again, and it appears on your computer. And it's, you know, so in a lot of ways, when, you know, it, you can record when it's convenient. Something that's interesting about our band is that everybody writes music to a certain degree. And it's, I think that, you know, inspiration hits at different times of the day. And it was freeing to be able to have this collaboration environment, but at the same time, be able to work on it at our own pace. And so, I mean, for live music is a lot like, you know, it's kind of like a collage where you just throw stuff together and you hope that it works and great. But, you know, recording is in a lot of ways like a painting. You're perfecting something specific. And it felt like that with everybody. It felt like everybody was kind of putting their best foot forward, and it was really cool.
When you guys are putting these songs together, do you think about the live expression of these songs, or is it about, you know, the album is one form of art and being able to take these songs on the road or experiment with these songs in front of a live audience is kind of a different art form, and being able to translate one to the other is kind of where it gets intricate and busy?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we're never just only writing for the studio, you know, because, you know, obviously we play a lot of shows. And I don't know that we'll play, I mean, I'm sure we'll play some of the songs exactly like they are on the album, maybe once or twice, but they'll be augmented, you know, and restructured as the tour progresses. That's normally how it goes. Which is, you know, it's really fun and it keeps it interesting.
Yeah,
for sure.
I would say that we should probably think about more how we're going to do it live sometimes than we do. I mean, I tend to like just try not to think about that when I'm writing, because you know, it puts a limit on what the instrumentation can be, and that puts a limit on, you know, what you're going to write, which can be good, but at the same time, you can't always do that. So like we said earlier, we're about to get into the studio like right after this and start to really dissect who's going to play what and how we're going to do it. And it's always a challenge, but it's a fun challenge.
Is that a matter of programming, keyboards, synths, other electronics on stage, so that, you know, I mean, there are only, and I say this, five of you, but there's a lot more. No, there's actually, yeah, there's five of you, but there's actually a lot more going on than what, you know, if you went to see a rock and roll band perform with a couple guitars. There's a lot more going on than just the sound that five people, human beings, can make, unless you're octopuses. How does that all work? I mean, are there triggers? Are there things that you're doing that allow you to make so much music? I mean, there has to be, right? I mean, there's a secret. I don't divulge the whole secret, but I'm curious about what goes on.
I think that we try to expose what we're doing as much as possible. There's really no secrets in terms of us. We want, you know, I think that if you listen to electronic music, IDM music, modern music, there is almost always something more going on than what is being performed at that present moment. And in so much as that, we're kind of, you know, that's, yeah, it's funny that we're talking about this, because we're about to just get into it. And right now, we're going to be figuring out how and what and when for the stage. One thing that we do that a lot of people don't I think at this point is we're all synced up MIDI wise, and MIDI is a huge part of what we do. It helps us. It does everything from clock certain devices to change pads, change different voices that we're using. It's incredibly deep and incredibly nerdy, and that's that's a big part of what we do. We're coming up at a time where progressive music isn't very popular, you know. So what's interesting is that whereas some of those bands you saw, you know, Yes and then later of course Pink Floyd and like all these bands, they had like, you know, a crew of 20 people that were dedicated to making sure the right voice was on the right thing at the right time. We had to learn how to do that ourselves as well as perform, you know. And it's been, to a certain degree, what's cool about that is that there's no separation between what we want to do and what we can do. We can figure it out. But at the same time, sometimes I feel like we spend a lot of time working on the mechanics and wish we could spend a little bit more time working on the music. And so that's why we're kind of doing this little session we're about to do here, where we're not focusing on the music as much as how we're going to do the music. And I think we're going to find ourselves doing this a lot more often in the future, because it's just going to streamline our rehearsals.
The festival situation must be a good one for you guys, because people who aren't necessarily exposed to progressive music, who are listening to bluegrass or are listening to rock or are listening to blues music or whatever, get a chance to see you, particularly in the summer, on different bills that feature music that they may not be aware of. I'm curious about how important the festival experience is for you guys in terms of garnering a bigger audience to bring under the tent.
I think it's been invaluable. Like it has been a real blessing, because we, you know, like you just said, there's people who wouldn't necessarily come see us at a club show. we'll just wander by. And, I mean, it really took off. This whole thing kind of took off for us after All Good, which is a festival in West Virginia, I think 2010, maybe.
No, it was earlier than that. It was probably
2009.
8 or 9.
Yeah. But I just remember playing, it was like a day set. And there was just a million people there, and out of nowhere, you know, and then, you know, a lot of people became interested in us after that, and we started getting bigger slots, and it's just been really great. You know, the festivals can be sometimes a bit more challenging in the respect that, you know, you have to basically, you don't always get a sound check, and you just got to get up there and make it happen. But as far as audience wise, you know, it's great. It's been really good to us.
What have been some of the, I mean, you guys spend your life on the road. Well, not entire lives, but a good chunk of life. Have there been specific highlights for you? Specific shows? I mean, you mentioned All Good, you know, back 10 years ago, probably, but have there been other momentous occasions where you've thought, yeah, we are where we're supposed to be, and we're doing the things that we're supposed to be doing? Were there specific incidents like that throughout the career thus far?
I think there's been, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, it's really easy to not like acknowledge that those type of feelings when it's constantly happening, which is unfortunate. You know, like, it's just kind of been a whirlwind for the past bunch of years, and things start to blur together. But then, you know, when you're looking back on it, there's definitely been some moments that are extremely surreal. I mean, I would say that headlining Red Rocks was pretty much, I mean, I still haven't wrapped my head around that, or what we were doing there. I would say for me, the two headlining Red Rock shows were extremely surreal. And looking back, it's something that I think we'll be proud of in the future.
Anyone else want to chime in on that, or
for me, it's been, you know, random. It's random moments. Sometimes it's like a small show, and you just get that, you know, the band's just, we're just hitting it. And whatever it is, it's finally like there's just that one thing that just works. And because of the, you know, the nature of what we do, it's different. It's every night, sometimes the same song can be played, you know, 30 different ways. And sometimes it totally doesn't work. And sometimes it does. When it does, and when people are feeling it, and it's at random. It could be a super big show. I mean, of course, the big festivals and Red Rocks, it's incredible. But you just, it's almost like it's like a random. You get those one transcendent moments that just happen, and you're just like, yeah, that was it. And you can't plan for it. You can't expect when it's going to happen. And I think that our fans sometimes pick up on that. You know, like they want to see us when it's a big epic stage and stuff like that. But I don't think that it matters as much to them as, hey, remember that one show in that one weird obscure town and that one weird obscure venue when it was just it. You know, like, and that's the beauty of this. And it can only happen. You can't plan for it. It can only happen in the random just nature of being an improvisational band, you know? And it's just, those are the moments for me that just remind me that, like, what else could I possibly be dreaming about doing right now?
The visual aspect of your shows is so critical. Because it is a trip and a journey that you take people on when you perform live. How integral are the visual artists that contribute to what you're doing? I know that you have a gallery on your website, which is so cool that you're able to feature some of these artists who have participated with you. I mean, are they critical at this point to the tour and to the visual expression of what you guys are doing on stage?
You know, Dustin's been Dustin Klein is our visual guy at this point. Before him, we had Jason Takahashi, and for the life, we had Daniel Hyatt. Now Dustin's kind of taking all that on. And these people have, throughout the years, been just, you know, integral to trying to set a specific feeling and a specific vibe. And our, you know, a lot of the artists that you see listed there are trying to artistically, visually, put their finger on what we're trying to put our finger on musically. And it's been, I mean, the resurgence of visual art into this community, specifically this kind of, you know, festival live music community, has been unprecedented over the last little bit. And there's just so much visual art coming out right now that we can't deny it. And I think that when everybody's kind of syncing up on these themes that we have, it would be silly of us not to embrace those themes in a live sense. And really, I think it helps push forward the subject matter that we're touching on, as well as, yeah, just the general vibe, even if it doesn't have, like, it's an instrumental song, it doesn't have a specific message, that the general vibe is gripped by these visual artists. And yeah, so it's definitely a big part of our show, and we're super lucky to come up in a time when it wasn't all just, you know, Andy Warhol. It was, you know, not saying anything specific about that,
yeah,
but
yeah,
you know, that there was meaning behind the music and meaning behind the visual, you know.
And finally, I want to talk about your fans. And I think it's so cool that you call, at least on your website, your fan club, the fam club, because they are an integral part of what you're doing. I mean, if you have nobody to play to, that would suck, and you probably wouldn't be doing it. But also how involved they are in the community and coming to shows and probably touring around with you guys. I mean, how important is that that group to you?
It's everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty much, it always blows me away constantly. And I forget about it. Not completely, but I, you know, I'm having a bad day or it's a tough part of the tour. Then I remember that there are, you know, a bunch of people who have got our backs and they're, you know, they're going to come see us and they really enjoy it. And it really makes everything so much better. And it is, you know, it's the reason why we do this. So it's been really great to have that for sure.
Are there familiar faces?
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, it's just really inspiring too. Yeah, like familiar faces that
at places, and you know, there's people that used to come to a bunch of shows but don't anymore, but we know that it's just because that's how life is, you know, and we know that they still love us and everything. And I don't know. I think it's really interesting. Like, I feel like our fans are really starting to accept the fact that we are going to make the music that we're going to make because it's from our heart. And the fact that they accept that and don't, you know, push us to do certain things or, you know, make us feel pressure to be a certain way, is just like the most amazing blessing that anybody as an artist could have, you know? And, they're just, they're everything. Without the fans, like, this whole thing is just completely meaningless.
You begin a pretty significant tour in a couple of days, so I'll let you get back to the studio to figure out all of the things that you need to do to prepare for the tour. Thanks so much for taking the time, guys. Thanks for great music, really inspired music that's, you know, a little bit different for some people, but very comfortable for others, and can't thank you enough for what you guys do. So thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank
today.
You, Aria.
Yeah, man.
Thanks for having us.
That was a very extensive conversation, and we touched on so much from influence to visual art and, of course, their community. This band is the total package, from their stage presence and performances to their thoughtful musical arrangements and visual display. Papadocio will be on the road quite a bit over the next little while. You can get all the details at papadocio.com. We've also created a YouTube and Spotify playlist, and those details are available on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter feeds, which we hope you're following. Before we leave you, have a listen to Pool of Stars, also off Content Coma. This is Papadocio.
Close eyes gives way. stars, you can feel an axis turn. Oh, the weightlessness is so surreal, my mind is floating. And even if I close my eyes, I can see a billion suns. Oh, the hunger of this gravity won't leave without me.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit osirispod.com. Thanks for listening.
Osiris.